Hello, everyone. Michael Robertson Jr. here. This is episode 31 of the Hallowed Horror Podcast. And of course, I have with me this evening my very good friend and co-host, Mr. Jason Collins.
Hello and good evening, Michael Robertson Jr. How are you tonight?
Great. You went with a full name. How official.
How formal. How formal of me.
We are the opposite of formal.
Episode 31 here, and I've never really said how much I really love our intro music on this podcast.
It's really slick. I should have looked it up before this, but I'll put it in the credits of this episode, the description, who actually made it. It's from Epidemic Sound, which is an audio subscription service, which is really, really slick. But when we first started, I was looking for some catchy intro music that sounded kind of creepy, but not like, old school horror, music. And I just kind of fell in love with this. So yeah, I'll put the link to it down in the description of the episode.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I'm digging your sweatshirt tonight. I know I already told you that, but for our listeners,
I'm wearing
a Blumhouse sweatshirt.
Yeah, I recently saw that they had a store, like a merch store online. I was like, well, I should have been there a long time ago. So I grabbed the sweatshirt and I got a t-shirt. So I refrain from buying any more than that because I probably could have bought a lot more. But
it looks slick. It looks good.
Thanks. I have a couple agenda items before, as usual.
Okay.
You know what else is interesting is this is episode 31 and you have never once done the intro.
I refuse to. I'll just mess it up. I know
okay.
it.
Okay. So it's never happening. Got it. Scratch that off the list. A couple things I want to talk about. First, this is big news. This was like maybe the most shocking thing that I heard all week. You went to a movie theater recently.
Oh my gosh, I did. And it wasn't the first time either. And during this, like since AMC opened up, it's not the first time.
Oh, you kept it from me.
I couldn't even tell you what the first movie we saw was now. But we went last Friday, my wife and I, and we had a date. And it was good. It was a good movie and a good date. She's good company. We went and saw Nobody, which is an action movie, sort of like a fun John Wick universe. It was really, really good. I forget the guy's name now, though. Sorry. Do you remember his name?
Better Call Saul. Saul Goodman. But what was it? What's his acting name? Why am
I not blanking on it, too? I forget his name.
Jeez Louise. We're on a movie podcast. As soon as you say it, I'm going to know it, too. I would be able to recall this name any given time if it wasn't asked specifically what his name was. But anyway.
Yeah. Bob Odenkirk.
Odenkirk, yep. There you go. Yeah, it looked fun. I remember when that trailer came out. I think they delayed that because of, the COVID for a while there. Mm-hmm. But that's really what I wanted to ask you about. Like, how long ago did the theaters open where you are?
Oh, it's been a few months now.
Really?
Yeah, it's not a new thing. They opened up with, heavy restrictions and, whole rows roped off that you can't, sit behind or, right in front of anybody. It was good. It's definitely not the experience that you're used to, but still a very good experience. If you like that, movie type experience, and with our arguments in the past, it is a lot less people, but at the very same time, I was still super, super fucking irritated with this joker beside me that was sitting on the other end of the row. And he was just like constantly moving his feet. And just like the floor was like sticky where he was. And so you could just hear every movement he was doing. And I was just like, we have got to move. And so we did. But man, it was so annoying. But yeah, not to get on this tangent again, but it really solidified, our one of our big hatreds for going to a movie theater in public.
Yeah. I didn't realize they were open. See, the one in where I live closed when COVID hit, and it closed. Like it, they're no more. It's out of business. However, I did hear through the grapevine that apparently it has been like planned to be reopened. I don't know if somebody came in and bought it or if they just changed their mind or what, but it went from like, hey, this is going to be done. We're probably going to reuse the building for something to now I think they're going to reopen the theater, but I haven't heard anything yet.
Is it an AMC theater?
Ours is an AMC or a Regal? I think ours is a Regal. Yeah.
Okay. As far as I know, AMC were the only ones that were open.
Okay.
But Regal is getting ready to open back up because we have a Regal here in Valley View. So, okay.
Got it.
And it is through, I've heard through the grapevine that it's opening up soon.
Okay. Well, I don't have any plans to be there anytime soon, but it's, I mean, it's good that they're opening. I mean, it is. I'm glad that we're at least getting back to that point in our life where we can go to a movie theater if we want to. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah. Especially for movies like this, where they had no plans to release it digitally. They were just theater only, you know, initially.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what the time frame looks like. Because, gosh, there was one production company or movie house that was that they went on record and said they were going to shorten their span between when it was in the theater and then when it was available on demand, specifically talking to AMC, because I remember AMC was like almost being kind of snotty and acting like, oh, we don't need you guys if you're not going to give us the movie, you know, indefinitely until whenever. So Whatever, I'll be curious to see if all of a sudden that window is like short, like, you know, 30 days or 45 days or something like that before it hits the VODs.
But. And we talked about this before, and I don't want to go down this road again, but I think theaters as a whole, they really need to heighten the experience a lot and if they want to survive going forward.
Yeah, I agree. Especially for the prices they charge.
Mm-hmm. Like this experience just last Friday was nowhere near heightened. It was the exact same experience, just, you know, sticky floors and less people.
Yeah.
So. It was very disappointing as far as the experience is concerned, but the movie was really good.
That's good. I'm not going to even touch on my theater going experiences. Listeners, you can go back and listen to several older episodes to hear me rant and rave about
just,
that.
Just pick one at random.
I've been forbidden for talking about it anymore. all right, moving on. Next piece of news. Did you see that? This isn't necessarily horror, but it's kind of the murder mystery. I mean, this was a big movie 2 years ago or so. Did you see the Knives Out deal? $450 million Netflix paid for a 2-film deal to get, I guess, Knives Out 2 and 3.
Yeah, that's very exciting because I finally just watched that movie last week.
Oh, nice.
Unrelated to the deal that I didn't realize. I had no idea that was going on, but I just thought, okay, it's time for me to go ahead and watch this. And I really loved it. So
yeah, it was
I'm
good.
Excited.
Those are fun types of movies. I always enjoy those types of movies. I didn't love the ending of that movie, but that's for a whole different podcast, not this one. last little tidbit. This is just a humorous kind of like, here's another idiot. I talk about stuff, comments that I get on Facebook sometimes, you know, that on my social media advertisements. And I had a gentleman, very, very distinguished and well-spoken individual, that commented on one of my ads that was saying that, you know, fans of Stephen King would like this book. It's a very common advertising tool that I use. And this guy says, I would never buy a book based on a Stephen King endorsement. I use his books for toilet paper.
My goodness.
And I'm thinking, that's got to be the most expensive toilet paper that you could buy. Like,
that's a disdain for that author.
Yeah. And also, like, this is another one of those situations where, like, well, congratulations, man. I'm glad you decided that you were able to come on the Facebook and explain this to me, right? Like, these people just make my head hurt. Like, you know, I don't understand the mindset that you feel like this is the thing that I want to say today, like, to the world. It's so weird. But anyway, I hid that comment and moved on. Jason, what movie are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight we are talking about a movie titled The Dark and the Wicked.
And where can viewers find this film?
Well, it's a service that I don't think we've talked about a lot.
How do you pronounce it? It's kind of difficult.
It's like kind of like when you're cold and what is it again? Shudder.
Shiver?
That's what it is.
Shiver? No, Shudder. That's Shudder. Right. Yes.
Yes.
Good job. Okay, great. Yeah. Once again, we're on a Shudder kick. That's okay. Although our next episode, I can call this right now, our next episode will not be a Shudder film. I promise you. We're going to do Godzilla versus Kong, right?
Godzilla versus Kong. Yeah. And you know what? We just had this conversation a couple of days ago about where were all the mainstream horror movies coming out. And then it was like they just came out of the woodworks here the last few weeks. I think I sent you three trailers for them.
Yep, you did.
For a few that I want to watch. One was called The Night House, which looks really, really good. That's got some, that's like a psychological thriller. That, I don't know if you watched them at all, but that one looks really, really interesting. Things Heard and Seen. That was another really good one. And then, of course, we got another Saw movie coming out, Spiral.
Yeah, and that one got delayed because I saw the trailer for that very early last year. Mm-hmm. It's like Spiral from the Book of Saw, I think is like the official name of it. Yeah,
right. Or something, yeah, like, something that. Like that.
Yeah, that's like, that looked pretty cool. But yeah, that got pushed back. So I'm glad to see it's finally coming out now. I would like to see that. I'm a fan of the Saw franchise, if not all of the Saw films, but... Mm-hmm. Anyway, yep. So
that'll be good.
Yeah, The Dark and the Wicked. It's on Shudder, and this is one that I. Oh, by the way, after Godzilla versus Kong, there is another movie on Shudder that I want us to watch and do because it's getting a lot of hype that I'm seeing on socials. So we'll be back to our regular scheduling program after our 1 week hiatus.
We've really got to start talking to Shudder here,
right?
We need to get start getting some sponsorship.
Right, so many plugs we give them. So this movie, it's been out for a few months, but I saw a lot of people in my horror circles talking very highly of it. So I definitely wanted to watch it. And in addition to that, what had me really intrigued was it's from the same writer and director who wrote and directed one of my favorite home invasion / horror films that has maybe one of the greatest lines in a horror film ever, written, directed by Brian Bertino, I hope I'm saying that right, and mm-hmm. the movie I'm referring to is The Strangers, which is amazing.
Back in 2008, wasn't that?
Yeah, long time ago. I actually had forgotten that it was that long ago, and I've only actually seen that movie twice. You know, we think being is my favorite, like, and it's been out for so long, I would have watched it more, but yeah, mm-hmm. so I was really, like, excited when I found out that he had done this, and we can... get into our entire conversation about it, but I'll go ahead and just say that I really enjoyed this movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I did too. I loved this movie. It was maybe one of the scariest movies I've seen in a while. It was a different kind of scary. It reminded me of like an Ari Aster movie where it was like really dark and bleak and almost like a heartbreaking scary movie. Like I was not only scared, but there were times that I was like getting almost emotional. Like it was just, man, it messed me up for like a day afterwards. Yeah. I was not at all healthy afterwards.
See, I wasn't actually sure if you were enjoying it because we had, maybe you were just busy, but like we were kind of texting a little bit about like watching it and when we were going to record. And you had said that it was taking you a while to watch it, and then you didn't finish it yesterday. And I was like, man, is he, like, not into it? Like, is he just struggling to watch it? And I was like, crap, this is going to be a very polarizing episode. Because I was like, man, this movie is pretty slick. But
no, I enjoyed it a lot. I really, really love this movie. This will be a movie that sticks with me for a while. Like I said, it's definitely, it had, like, it had tones from Hereditary. For me, I think especially the way it revolved around grief and loss and isolation, man, it just played so well to those emotions, and it was just good. It was so good.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think grief is the theme that tied both those movies together and the way mm-hmm. that it was presented, but we'll get into that. So from a synopsis perspective, I've got this that I pulled from IMDb. On a secluded farm in a nondescript rural town, a man is slowly dying. His family gathers to mourn, and soon a darkness grows, marked by waking nightmares and a growing sense that something evil is taking over the family. Cast, Maren Ireland plays Louise, which is main character. Michael Abbott Jr. plays Michael. Julia Oliver Touchstone played Virginia. And then who was the father? Michael Zaxt? Is that David Straker? He was the...
Yep.
The, mm-hmm. And then Xander Berkeley was the priest. Oh, who was the nurse? Lynn Andrews was the nurse. So I don't know that I've seen any of these people, anything that I could remember, although when I went to look at their filmographies, it looked like Marin had been in quite a few things, but I couldn't like visually place her, remember seeing her in those films.
Yeah, Marin, if anybody watched The Umbrella Academy on Netflix, she was a main character in the second season of Umbrella Academy. And Michael Abbott Jr., I don't think I've ever seen him in anything, though I did see that he did some body contortions, wrong word, where they do the graphic stuff for the video games.
Motion capture.
Like motion capture, exactly. He did some motion capture for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, wow. So maybe I have seen him, just not in the flesh. Got it.
Yeah. And I think both of these, so Marin and Michael, so Louise and Michael in the story, they were the son and daughter of Virginia and David, who, did you know that? I'm going off topic here, but there's a quick little note I wanted to say that this farmhouse was the director's, it was Brian Bertino's, he grew up in this house. It was his childhood home.
Really?
Yeah, he grew up in this farmhouse.
That's very interesting. Like,
yeah,
that almost makes very, it very makes cool it
when,
creepier.
I found that out. Yeah. So anyways, the dad, David, he's bed stricken pretty much the entire movie. And Virginia is the mom. We only see her for a while. Main characters, hard hitters, are Louisa and Michael. And they did such a fantastic job in this movie from an acting perspective, how much range they were hitting during this entire film. And their relationship was so raw and real and relatable. But what I found interesting was that it was both of theirs first horror movies that they'd ever done.
That's fascinating. So many good, we've talked about this, maybe not specifically, but we've seen it. There are so many good performances that we've seen from people, and it's in their first horror film. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not an actor, so I don't know what it takes to be in a horror film, but it's pretty mind blowing how fantastic some of these are to be the first time they're in this genre. So, and you're right. I agree with you. So, I mean, the plot set up for this is pretty simple. The father, the elderly father, is dying. He's bedstricken. He says nothing almost the entire film. The elderly mother is basically coping with this impending, doom of losing her husband. They do work on a farm, so she's kind of like taking some of the farm duties and doing her thing. And then the kids come, basically almost to kind of say goodbye because they know the father is on the way out and to help their mom. And as soon as they get there, the mother is basically almost appalled that they're there. And she basically says, you shouldn't have come. You shouldn't be here. I didn't want you to come. And they don't really understand that because they want to be there for her and to see their father one last time. So there's tension like right off the bat. And there's just this really foreboding, gloomy feeling that just shows up in every scene of this movie. Like there's no pleasantness, no happiness. And in that regard, it really did remind me of Hereditary. Like there's just nothing good happening here. It's so raw and on the screen all the time.
Yeah. It just compounds on itself throughout the entire film to where, I did almost have to break it up in the middle because it was exhausting. I mean, it was, man, there was just like, there was no lighthearted, there was no comic relief. It was just down in the dirt, hardcore, the entire movie.
Yeah. And not only is there, I mean, you could have removed like the supernatural element from this and it still would have been a depressing movie just with the characters and the emotions that they're dealing with. You said it, we talked about it. This is a movie about grief and going through those stages is the way I was kind of seeing it. But the, I guess, antagonist to all this, the grief personified, is essentially this demonic presence. I mean, do we want to call it the devil? I don't know, but there's something evil. here that has, you know, first started preying on the mother because, you know, she was the one that was there. And then when the kids come over, he starts kind of messing with them too. But when the kids show up, the mom goes. He basically takes her out with, you know, I guess all of her emotions building up, and she has this breakdown moment, and then it consumes her, and she dies. And there's a really cringy scene before we see how she died that made me kind of squirm a little bit. And I saw it coming. You know, you saw it coming.
Oh, yeah. Because you saw it from the very beginning, the first time she was there at the cutting board.
They set it up.
Tell me, Michael, have you ever cut yourself while you were cooking?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Severely, though?
No, not
just a nick.
No, not severely. I'm not.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Yeah.
I haven't either. No, she went up straight chopping up, and like she continued to chop the fingers that she cut off. That was was what got me.
It was like, yeah, it made me hurt.
She just kept going for it.
It made me hurt for sure. But yeah, I mean, so the mother basically ends up dying very early on. And then the children are left with dealing with this presence and their father. And one thing that I saw some Rotten Tomatoes, you know, reviews, because I've gotten actually really fascinated recently with reading some of the Rotten Tomato reviews of these films. It was particularly helpful when we just did Lucky, because seeing some of these women film critics review that movie that was about, you know, women's struggles dealing with misogyny was very enlightening. So I kind of wanted to see the perspectives of other people, how they interpreted this film. And one thing that I really didn't catch on was not only were we dealing with grief, but we were dealing with grief from opposing sides of the religious spectrum. We had people that were religious and believers, and then we had the children who were, for all intents and purposes, non-believers, atheists, just, you know, not, you know, to say, hey, evil is here would be so foreign to them that they don't really accept what's happening.
Yeah. You know, it makes me question, though, who was actually there on the opposite side of the spectrum. I mean, their family didn't believe in God or the devil as a whole, you know, and the kids made that apparent. They said, oh, my mom, you know, our mother does not believe in God. Though she kept referring, I don't know if she directly referred to this evil as the devil or not, or did she? Or did she just keep saying, no, maybe in the diary she did say the devil, the devil, the devil. Did she say that?
I do not recall.
I think she might have, but it came down to, you know, where the priest, who, by the way, Xander Berkeley, man, he was so good.
Was.
I wish we could have seen more of him, because his performance in this movie was pivotal. I mean, it was so fucking good. I am confused about his role, though. And well, I was hoping maybe you could clear that up for me.
Well, I was going to say, so in terms of like who was on the believer side of the camp, you did have the priest, although that is questionable when you kind of see how his storyline played out, but you had the nurse. She was a believer. So, you know, it was a fascinating, this movie has some psychological elements to it that you can really dig in and unpack to like really understand the story. But even if you don't care about any of that, this movie's creep factor is 11 out of 10, like for sure. And it doesn't do anything really that you've never seen before for the most part, but it executes like all of them really well. Like it's just set up so well. And I think I'd have to go back and watch The Strangers again to really be able to say this with absolute confidence, but I would suspect that what I'm about to say about this movie would hold true to that movie as well. Part of the success, or the majority of the success, was atmosphere, and just the almost claustrophobic feeling you got in this house, and just like you could just feel like you were there. You know what it's like you felt like you could be somebody in that house and know what they're experiencing. It was so creepy. It was a lot of tight shots, close up shots. You know, even the shots like that were wide, that were like from across the living room or something. Like, it's not a big house, so you can like see almost all of the house at one time and just catch that one little thing that's off. you know, that shouldn't be there. And we've all done that in our own homes. Like, you stand there in your living room in the dark and you go, wait a minute, what is that thing right there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This movie did, you talk about atmosphere, but this movie did a great job of being relatable with it being around grief. And so nothing was too far-fetched. I mean, you're at a very simple farmhouse, you know, secluded out in the middle of nowhere. You know, they were goat farmers as far as I could tell. And so it was all very simple. It was all of it was very grounded, and even the characters and their relationships with each other, and then the storyline of grieving for a parent that's dying. It was all so relatable. And I think those are the stories that where if the viewer can put themselves in this situation and in this storyline and relate themselves to the characters and their relationships, that heightens the experience exponentially. So with it being such a grounded story and then a grounded scene and everything, I think that alone made this story that much scarier, because it was like, yeah, I can see, like, you just wonder how are you going to react in this kind of situation. And you know, I think we've all lost somebody, whether that be if you're young, if you haven't lost anybody, but I mean, everybody's lost, you know, either family members or friends or even pets. I mean, it can really, really affect you psychologically in a lot of different ways. And so we see a lot of different, you see how it affects both the brother and sister in different ways too. And we can get to that in just a second, but what happened with the priest? I mean, what did you really catch on what was going on with the priest afterwards when she called him and he was nowhere even near there?
Before I answer that question, I do want to just validate further what you just mentioned on that last thing you just said. We've talked about this before several times, how, you know, Stephen King has said that, you know, if when you're writing horror, that if the readers don't care about the characters, if the characters aren't real, they don't care what happens to them, it's not as scary. And mm-hmm. you just kind of really hit that again with, you know, it's being relatable. We've all been in this situation, and that's what makes it real, which most it's what makes it effective. So agree 100% on that. The priest. No, I don't understand exactly what happened, unless he was purely fabricated in the flesh by this evil entity, just like the girl that the family friend / farmhand, you know, saw that was mm-hmm. like cutting herself up. It could be a situation with that. But again, if that is the case, I don't exactly know what it was he was attempting to do. Like, what was his purpose? Was he trying to tempt them to the other side? Or, you know, just, I don't know what his exact purpose was there. But when she tries to call him later and he's like, I've never been there, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then he, you know, finds out that the name is the same as his daughter that he lost. Like, that really threw me. I was like, I don't understand what's going on, but that's still really creepy. So no, I didn't grab that specifically, but it was definitely a loop that made the film a little more like, whoa, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, it was definitely creepy, but I couldn't figure out where that puzzle piece fit into the movie though. So yeah. That's sort of where I was too with it. And I was like, yeah, that was pretty creepy, especially how, you know, always never been there, but where was the thread though?
Yeah.
Like how did this evil entity even come up with this person specifically to sort of egg these people along? So
yeah, I mean, it could be something similar. I mean, we don't see what happens to the priest afterwards, but you know, it could be something similar to what happened with Michael when he kind of had his breakdown and he left, and when he gets home and that deceit, that deception that was there, like mm-hmm. maybe this was this evil thing using its powers to really inflict emotional pain on this priest, on this servant of God. I don't know how it ties to the family
let's
still.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, I think this evil thing really wanted everybody that it was affecting to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's ultimately what it was trying to do. And Michael was strong enough to be able to stop himself from doing it in the barn that one day or that one night. And that's when he was like, fuck it, I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here. but it was obviously not enough to just get away. And this was the heartbreaking part of the movie. I mean, all of it was really sad, but once this happened, man, this hit me emotionally, him getting home. And I thought, I mean, it was sort of twofold. He gets home to his wife and two kids, and he's going through the house looking for them. He finds them in the kitchen, with what appears that the mother slit the throats of both of his girls, young girls, and then slit her own throat. And they're just dead in the kitchen on the kitchen table. And so he is so distraught that he takes out his own knife and goes ahead and he slits his own throat, only to then, you know, close his eyes and open them again and realize that they're not there. It was all just a mirage. And then his wife and kids come home shortly after that to find him in the kitchen. So that was like, oh man, that just hit me so hard, where it was like, at first you thought, oh man, this evil made it all the way to the house and just to torment him, only to come to find out that it was only making him see this and drive him to kill himself. And then now his family has to deal with that too.
Yeah.
It was just so powerful.
That was without a doubt. I mean, this whole movie is creepy, and it definitely has lots of like surprise. They're kind of jump scares, but they're still really effective. Mm-hmm. But that was the one scene that legitimately surprised me. Like it was a bait and switch that, to be honest with you, I didn't see coming, because I went through the same mental, I think, process of that scene that you did. Like, okay, good, he's leaving. And then when he got home and nobody was answering him, when he was like, hey guys, I'm home, I thought, oh no, you know, this is the telltale sign of he's going to find something bad. But yeah. Then my gear started turning. And I was like, well, how? Like, what happened? Because then I was thinking, well, he did talk to her on the phone while he was at the house, the farmhouse. It's like, maybe that's all it took. Maybe it just needs some voice or some way to get to the other person. And you're right, like, this evil did get to the house, and it did get to the mom, and she killed the kids. I was like, oh my God, like, how wild is that? And then when you see that it was all just deceitfulness, and that it was just making him see it, you find out, oh, it finally succeeded. It failed the first time in getting him to kill himself. It found a new and better way to do it. And you're right, mm-hmm. It was just like, it was one of those, oh shoot, that was really clever moments. I enjoyed it. Probably my favorite part of the film, even though it's probably the saddest and most horrific part of the film.
Yeah, this, to say this is like a psychological thriller is just it's an understatement. I mean, it like bores its way into your head.
Yeah,
and it's just a really smart horror, and I think that's really why I enjoyed this movie a lot.
And again, it works both ways. That's the thing that makes this movie really intriguing to me, is you could show this to somebody that doesn't want to care about like unpacking it and like mm-hmm. understanding the theme, and it's still a really creepy, fun horror watch if you just want the scares, right?
Yeah. But then let's talk about some of those. I mean, there's some really good ones of those as well. The very first one that I recall, you know, being a jump scare that's memorable is the shower scene, mm-hmm. where she's so the daughter is taking a shower, and she hears somebody come into the bathroom, and I don't know if she opens the shower curtain or not, but it gets opened, and her father, who has been, you know, bedridden for months now, is standing there, and he's got white eyes, and he's peeing himself, and then his like head starts doing that like crazy shaky thing.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a good scare for sure.
It was a good scare. That was like the first, oh, you know, got me moment. I do have a question about that though, because you just mentioned it. You're like, I don't know if she opened the curtain. She totally opened the curtain. And that's what threw me, because she thought it was her brother walking in. Yeah. And she was like, I just need a couple minutes. And then she got angry and like rips open the shower curtain. And I was like, what kind of relationship do you two have that you can just rip open the shower curtain with your brother standing there? But
that's a tiny peak situation.
Yeah.
Right? Or just yell from the other side, right?
Yeah. But yeah, that dramatic. That was a good scare. I really liked the moment where the son sees the mother outside the window. Mm-hmm. Something about those kind of scenes, I don't know what it is. They're so simple in concept, but they're always creepy. It always makes me also kind of remember like the original, I think Toby Hooper's adaptation of Stephen King's Salem's Lot, when the the young dead boy is like floating outside the window saying, "Let me in." That basically broke me as a child. I couldn't look out my bedroom window for years after that. That always reminds me of that. And those are always creepy. And the fact that she like floated up and was there, like, it was, and then she was, and then he didn't even see her when she came into the bedroom. That was like the, you know, I'm going to dangle the stick and then I'm going to whack you with it. You know, that was really, really good.
And it was her smile too. That, that smug, that creepy smile on her face. And I love that. I love that he had even mentioned that one point. He was like, "I saw mom out the window, but it wasn't her."
Right.
It's those kinds of little scary moments that are just, they're just these little seeds that are so good.
Yeah. And that was another thing about this film with the characters is they, do you remember how we, what were we watching? It was the, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it. There was one movie that we reviewed early on in the podcast and I asked the question, I was like, why is it that every time, you know, somebody experiences something random or crazy or weird and they tell somebody, that other person's reaction is always complete disbelief. Like, what are you talking about? That can't be. Like, nobody in the history of horror has ever said, that sounds serious, we should figure this out or we should get out of here. This brother and sister, they almost did that. Like, they were like, they would say something to each other and they were like, that's not good, or they just wouldn't say anything, you know. Like, like the brother, I saw mom, but it wasn't her, you know, and the sister was just like, yeah, there's some wild shit happening on around here. But they couldn't leave because of the father. Their attachment to their father kept them from leaving. So,
and they tried to get, him out, but he was so close to death that the doctor wouldn't even, he was like, I'm not taking him off of whatever support he's on currently.
Yeah.
Which I thought, that's what ambulances are for, right? I mean, they can make that work, I think, but whatever. Yeah. But again, who knows? Maybe that was just another, conjuring of the evil that was there. I mean,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe he was manipulating the doctor in some way.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, I really thought for a while that, you know, the nurse at one point said, you know, there's so much evil around, but the thing that, something along the lines of the thing that can fight evil is love. You know, as long as love is around, maybe that will protect him. And I thought maybe there was that little, that was the only glimmer of hope that I had throughout the entire film, which this movie did not have much of. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe that there's going to be something that ends here on a high note. But as soon as she started shoving the knitting sticks into her eyes, I thought, well, that's not happening. Happening now.
Another one down.
She died horrifically.
Yeah,
it was pretty bad.
Yeah,
hers may have been the worst of all of them.
You know what? But, you know what scene other than the table with the children, the scene that actually I think hit me where I was like, this movie is just dark, was the massacre of the goats. Like,
oh,
something
my God,
that
yes.
was just, first of all, did they find a three-legged goat? Like, that one that like survived, that came back, that was just like running around with like the missing leg, and obviously they doctored it up to make it look like bloody and stuff. But like, was that a real three-legged goat, or did they somehow like?
No, because he was walking like it. I'm sure they just put a cast out. We need a three-legged goat. We will pay handsomely for it.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. But yeah, that was a rough scene too. I mean, just to go out and see all these innocent creatures just like slaughtered. And then when they had to burn them all, like,
oh yeah,
that was
dark.
Visually, this movie really hit all the tones it was trying to hit. Like, it was,
yeah,
it was good. Do you want to take a break and then get into our final rating, or do you have anything else you want to add other than this was a very dark and great film that we enjoyed a lot?
Oh man, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. It was before you brought up the goats, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, that's what it was. I remember now. I loved how subtle. I loved that you never really saw the antagonist here. You know, you see him twice that I can recall. Do you recall seeing him?
So, I thought I saw him very briefly in the very beginning with the goats, like like a single like frame or two where he flashes on. I was too scared to rewind it to watch again, so I didn't do it. But I thought that was him.
Yeah, he was. I caught him twice, and I just sent you some screenshots, and they're both creepy. But you're right. There was one when it was the goats, and then it was the very end. The very end. It wasn't the dad. It was him. And you remember them saying that they were like, oh, he wants the father, and it was almost like. It's almost like the father was giving him life or like physical form or something.
Yeah. Can you, I want you to, okay. This should probably go into our production value scale of our rating system, but can you believe that they spent all this time putting this dude in this kind of makeup for like two frames of the entire movie? Like,
it's worth it though. That's really good.
You don't even see it though if you don't pause it like you did.
Like, yeah, I mean, I was able to catch like two or three frames from each one. Yeah, I mean, it's so quick, but effective. I mean, it's those little things, the little effort that makes all the difference.
Yeah, that's really creepy. I did think that was him and the goats with the beginning, but
quick though.
Yeah, I didn't really want quick. I just assumed it was him, and I was satisfied with that in my mind. I do have one more note that I wanted to mention here. Talk about just visually telling a story. Nobody speaks in this movie for almost the first 7 minutes. It's basically a big opening scene with like the mother, before the kids arrive, and it's like completely engaging and completely effective, but there is no dialogue. And the dialogue is pretty sparse for the majority of this movie until like the tension and like the action, quote unquote, gets kind of ramped up, and the brother and sister are having to talk a lot. Like they really were sparse with the words, and I really like that. Like it fit this story so well.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Oh, and talk about the waking nightmare that she had right at the end, almost like almost like her dad was warning her to run.
Yeah.
But when he was like stuck on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Man, and the spiders coming out of the mouth at that one time. There was a lot of creepiness happening in this movie. they hit so much of it.
Yeah, and again, that's nothing that we haven't seen before, but it was just so perfectly executed here, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's take a break, and then when we come back, we'll do our rating.
Sounds good. Okay, we are back. It is time for the unofficial, official Hallowed Horror Podcast rating scale. You know what? It's official. This is our thing. This is our jam now. We've been doing this for several episodes. So I think we found the formula that works for us. We're going to stick with it.
I'll look into trademarking it later.
Okay, you can do that. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. All right, so the first category, if you don't know how this works, ladies and gentlemen, we rate movies in four different categories on a scale of 0 to 3 for each category. And those categories are story, characters, production value, and the kicker is scare factor. So a perfect film in Jason and Maya's eyes, a perfect horror film, mind you, would be 12. And we have not had a perfect 12, have we, since we've started this rating? We have reviewed films that if we had the rating, probably would have been 12s, but we have not yet had a 12 since we started the rating.
No, I don't think we have. And I think the coveted 12 is, it's gotta be hard to get there for us. So,
all right.
I am,
you're first.
I'm excited to see a 12 though, one day.
Could this be one? We haven't talked about it yet. We're going to see. We have not discussed this beforehand. This could be a very, very happy accident here, but I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. You're up first, so you... And we forgot. Is it story or characters first? You questioned me last week.
Did I question you?
You did.
I think it's story first.
Okay. Then you're up. Story, go for it.
All right. Well, for story, I'm going to give this a, this will be right out the gate.
No 12 story, tonight.
I'm going to give it a 2 for me. I loved the majority of the movie. But there were just a couple of things here and there that they didn't pay off on. One being the priest. I would have liked to have seen or figured out where that really came from. And then I guess at the end, I would have liked to have seen something that happened afterwards. Though I know that the director, blank on his name again, sorry, Brian Bertino, he has gone on record to say he does not like clear-cut endings, everything being explained. That's sort of his jam. He likes the ambiguity. So I get where he's coming from, and I enjoy it too, honestly. But I think for me, there was just a couple things that didn't pay off. And so for me, it wasn't like a perfect story, but I really loved the story. So a 2, 2.5. I'm not going to give it a 3. So.
Okay. And you know what? I agree with you. I'm going to give it a 2 as well. I think it's a very strong story, but I also think that it did leave maybe a little bit too much up to interpretation. Again, the priest was kind of the oddball there. There was just enough of it to make you kind of like feel like you didn't get everything to give it a 2. But I almost feel dirty giving it a 2 instead of a 3. But
the other thing too is, and we've said it a couple times, it wasn't exactly original. It was just so well executed.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Although I don't know if there's anything uniquely original anymore. But this. You're right. This felt like a movie that you had seen before, just not this version of it. And this was a really good version.
Yeah.
All right. So 2s for both of us on story. What do you give characters, Jason?
Characters, I'm giving it a 3. I love the characters. I love the acting. I love their performances. I loved... I don't think there was one character that was introduced in this movie, except for maybe the one guy that ate a bullet, ate the shotgun. I think he was probably the only one that we didn't really get much of a character build for, but it probably wasn't necessary either, even though they decided to show him killing himself. But everybody else, solid, so good. I love the characters. I love their arcs from when we first met them. They were very lighthearted and just kind of sort of not really happy to be there, but not really knowing what was going on either. And then seeing that arc to their demise at the end, it was just good. They did a really great job. So for characters, for me, it's just a very solid 3.
I'm gonna give it a 3 as well. And because these characters felt incredibly real to me, and this goes right back to what you were saying about being relatable. We've all been there. We've all done this sort of thing. Because they did not show up as like the happy, successful, like we are perfectly content with our lives, you know, children. They showed up, each of them seeming like they had, you know, their own stuff going on in the background, but they were here out of, you know, familial obligation. They wanted to do the right thing. And that showed in all of their interactions. Like they were there for their mother. They really didn't want to be there. It was kind of alluded to that the daughter really didn't have, you know, like a steady job or anything. She was just kind of like, you know, she was struggling. You know, it just felt real. These were not cardboard cutouts. These were not extremely successful or extremely impoverished, you know, characters. They were legitimate, just everyday, like middle-class people trying to survive, and they were dealing with their family, and their reactions to everything that happened, you know, was also very real. The way that, you know, Michael, the brother, you know, was wanting to get back to his family. The grief was eating at him, and he wanted to get back to his happier life, and he was struggling with that. You know, the daughter didn't have a lot to go back to, so she was very willing to stay there, even though everything was, you know, falling apart around her. Like, it was a very real situation. I thought the characters were very, very well developed, even though they really didn't. I mean, the finality to their arc was really just both of their deaths, which was kind of unfortunate. But, I mean, that was the way the story was written. So I'll go with it.
Michael had a great line too. When he was talking to his wife, he said that he's walking around here and he doesn't feel anything. So I think that was a great line. Cause I know I've been there where the grief is so, the grief is so strong where it's almost like your body just shuts down, and cause it becomes numb to what's going on, just to cope with everything that's going on. So that was a great analogy, just a great line for what was happening. Cause it can be interpreted to, you know, he was so grief stricken with everything that was going on. His mother just killed himself and his father's dying, but it could also be, I feel this evil taking over and I don't know, I can't feel anything else.
Yeah.
So it was really good.
All right. So we got 2 2s, 2 3s. Go for production value.
Oh my God. Production value is going to be another solid 3. I don't know who did the cinematography for this. I missed that, but this was such a well-produced movie. So Brian Bertino, he is no slacker when it comes to the horror genre. He's been doing it for a while. He knows what he's doing. He obviously knows how to direct his cast, and especially these characters that have, or these actors that have never done a horror film before. And he was able to walk them through what's going on. There was an interview I saw with Michael where he was saying that everything they've done, they didn't realize that how much coverage was really needed specifically for a horror movie. And he was like, Brian could tell that they were getting a little restless, and he explained the whole situation to him. And he said that, you know, after that, the production went much smoother because they just realized that, you know, he knew what he was doing and they were just following his lead. So he knows what he's doing for sure. And I thought the movie was, I mean, it looked amazing, from the set, you know, with the farmhouse, the cinematography, like you said, it was just so much of the movie. The first part of the movie was not heavy in dialogue, but they told so much story at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think the cinematography, the composition, the coloring was great. At no point was I wanting more from the production. It was solid. So
yeah,
it was a really beautiful movie. And at no point did I think I was watching some sort of B movie. I mean, this felt very high production. So for me, it's a solid 3. It was great.
I agreed. Again, I will give it a 3 because of everything that you said. I actually had that thought about the coverage while I was watching it, because I was thinking about the cinematography and how much I was enjoying it. Again, I was just fascinated by the way they were able to film all this stuff in such tight quarters. Like, that's not a very big place. And especially now that you find out it was a real home, like, it's not a set, you're right. I mean, they're in this little teeny shack almost. I was really impressed with the way they were able to film it. I thought, like you just said, it felt very organic and very real. And when you think about the fact that this was like never, I'll take what you said about, I didn't feel like I was watching a B movie. I didn't feel like I was watching a movie, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I never looked at the set and said, oh, they built that, or oh, they staged that. I mean, clearly they did, you know, I'm sure they staged this place for this movie, but like, it just felt like such a real place. So I think the production was great. I think the outdoor stuff with the goats, the effects, whether they're practical or VFX, for all of the evil stuff, like, there was nothing in this film that felt off from the production standpoint to me. So I'll give it a 3. I actually did look up the cinematographer. I thought I had it in my notes, but because I wanted to see if it was the same one from The Strangers, and it was not. All right. So we've got 2 2s, 2 3s. 2 3s. We're down to the kicker, which is scare factor. What do you give it, Jason?
Oh man, I'm going to give it a 3 2. I said it in the beginning of this podcast that it was probably one of the scariest movies I've seen in a while. And it was one of those that just, it chills you to the bone. And it was heartbreaking and sad and scary from a real world perspective. having to deal with grief and the relatability of the whole story. Again, I just compare it to, you know, Ari Aster's type of storytelling where it's like he's taking something real and making a horror movie out of it. And that just alone just kind of, it bores its way into your soul. And this was just no different. It was a really, 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 really well done horror movie with just very relatable, relatable horror, relatable scares. And then you throw in, you sprinkle in these little jump scares of, to make it, you know, more of a mainstream horror film. And it just covered the gamut as far as creep factor, you know, having the anxiety build. It was just a super well done movie overall. And so for scare, I give it a 3.
Well, we have agreed on every single category tonight, except for this one. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm of course giving this a 3. Of course I'm giving this a 3. But I will say this. This movie was extremely creepy to me. Like it's one of those movies that very rarely do I get like chills when I watch a film. I mean, I've seen so many horror films. I have read so much horror, you know, it takes something to really like get under my skin. This one did it. But I'll tell you something. If you took this movie and you to keep everything the same about this movie, except move it to a nicer, more modern farmhouse on like a more upscale looking piece of land out, you know, closer to society, it's not as scary. This location, this farmhouse is almost as big of a character as the humans, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it intensifies the scares because it's just a creepy looking place.
Yeah. You know, and knowing that it was the director's childhood home makes me wonder like how much in this film, especially angles and things that were happening, were the things that, you know, maybe small Brian Bertino was conjuring from when he was little. He was like, I remember sitting here and, you know, seeing these weird things crawl on the ceilings and stuff like that, wondering what was going to come around the corner here.
Yeah.
You know, things like looking out the window and wondering and hearing the wolves and wondering, you know, what's happening in the barn, those kinds of things. So I think it was probably the perfect place for him to set up a movie like this.
Okay, so we were wondering if tonight would be the perfect 12. It was not, but it was darn close. We both gave it an 11 out of 12. So
was that the highest one we've rated so far? I don't think we've even had an 11 so far.
No, I don't think we have, because we only started it recently. I think this is only like the fourth or fifth movie we've done with the rating. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely the best film we've watched, I think, since we started rating it. So right now, this is reigning supreme at 11. So, and
a well-deserving 11. Completely, this is such a good movie.
Completely well-deserved. I really kind of want to go back and watch The Strangers again. Maybe we'll have to do a later episode. If we ever run out of stuff to watch on Shudder, we can do that. But all right. If you're watching or listening and you haven't seen The Dark and the Wicked, I highly recommend it. It's probably, as of right now in 2021, is my favorite horror film that I've watched. I can say that very, very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. And, you know, we'd love to know what you thought of this movie. If you've watched it or if you do go see it, let us know. Where can they find us, Michael?
They can find us on all of the social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Search for Hallowed Horror Podcast. You will find us. And also, if you're listening to us on Anchor, which is our podcast host platform that we use, you do have the ability to send us audio recorded questions or comments. We'd love to hear some of them. We can include them in the episode. So check that out, anchor.fm, or you can download the Anchor app. That'd be really, really cool.
Jason. Yeah, we'd love that.
Anything else you want to add about The Dark and the Wicked?
No, I do not think so.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 31 of the Hallowed Horror Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed us and want to do us a huge favor, if you could leave us a review saying you liked the podcast, that'd be very helpful to us. We'd appreciate it very much. Until next time, stay safe, be well. We'll chat soon.